So hi there, my name is Anna DeMello and I'm talking with John O'Drew, who has just finished his fifth year of medical school at the University of Otago in Dunedin. That's in New Zealand, of course. John O took a year away from his medical training at Otago a couple of years ago now, in 2017, to do a year of research within the Department of Preventive and Social Medicine. And this research examined what it means to eat for both personal and planetary health. Jono is a lead author of a paper, a brand new paper, I should say, entitled Healthy and Climate-Friendly Eating Patterns in the New Zealand Context, which has just been published in the journal Environmental Health Perspectives, which is based in the United States. And this is an open access online journal for those who aren't familiar with it. So Jono is going to talk a little bit about the work and tease it out for us. So thanks for doing that.
No worries there. Thanks for listening, everybody.
So the paper offers quite a lot of interesting information in its introduction. And before I ask you some questions about what you found out and what you believe that it means for New Zealand, I'll provide a bit of context from that section specifically for those who might find it useful. So just to dive right into it, you write that the global food system is driving a so-called syndemic of malnutrition and climate change. So suboptimal or unhealthy diets are the single most important risk factor for death, and that's both globally and in New Zealand. So diseases that are largely lifestyle related, including things like cardiovascular disease, which is mainly heart attacks and strokes, along with cancer and diabetes, now collectively account for 73% of deaths around the world, which is pretty substantial. And the global food system, you write, is also among the main drivers behind both planetary disruption and climate change, so responsible for up to 29% of all human-caused greenhouse gas emissions, as well as significant soil degradation, deforestation, and biodiversity loss around the globe. Given the current food system's role in both the global burden of chronic disease and the climate crisis, the importance of transitioning toward a healthy and more climate-friendly food system is incontestable. You also write that as global environmental issues worsen and the need for urgent action continues to increase, and because of the body of evidence we now have, governments and policymakers are being called on more and more to do something concrete about this, to implement measures that take advantage of climate and health co-benefit opportunities. So this means that, opportunities that have the potential to do good for society by means of promoting good health and lowering greenhouse gas emissions simultaneously, and that food systems should play a big part in this effort. But you say there's a tendency among policymakers to be too hesitant, that they're waiting for evidence to support the local applicability of international research and to address these sort of context-specific, perhaps industry-promoted uncertainties about which foods are best promoted at the population level. So in other words, you know, the public is confused, continues to be confused. So given all that, I guess, can you tell me what the aims of this work were that you did for your research year?
Sure. So we set out to resolve some of these uncertainties that do persist strongly in New Zealand. So by this I mean, how do we compare to other parts of the world in terms of the climate impact of our food production systems and our dietary choices? New Zealand is a really important case study in this respect because our production systems are generally considered to be more efficient and less emissions intensive than those in other parts of the world, even though there's relatively little evidence to support these claims. So this is something that's widely promoted with respect to the livestock industry in particular. So basically, we set out to compile all of the available data on New Zealand food emissions into a database using some UK data to fill in the gaps where necessary. Then we use this database to model the climate impacts of various eating patterns as compared to the typical New Zealand diet. And as part of this work, we also looked at the population level health impacts and healthcare costs of each scenario that we modeled.
Okay, so that sounds like quite a big undertaking. Can you tell me first, before we get a little bit more into results and those types of things, can you tell me about the greenhouse gas emissions associated with different food items? Where do they actually come from? Because I feel like people might need some information, you know, around that, just to get some context.
Sure. I think that's definitely a good point to make. So the emissions come from a whole host of different stages within the so-called life cycle of a given food item. So that's from the time that it's actually being produced right up to the point that it's consumed by us. So to start, there are greenhouse gas emissions that result from farming or food production itself. These mainly come from practices like running equipment or tractors on the farm, using fertilizer, and in the case of cows and sheep, they mainly come from methane that is released as they digest their food. Then there are a bunch of other stages within the life cycle of foods that cause the release of greenhouse gas emissions, including the packaging and transportation of foods, refrigerating them, keeping them in a warehouse, and then the actual distribution of those foods from farm or processor to the supermarket or retail outlet itself. So what's interesting is that the production of foods, rather than their transportation, their packaging, or their storage, is by and large the most important source of emissions within the food system. There are also certain foods whose production requirements are much more intensive than others, and that's an important part of what we were trying to look at with this piece of work.
Mm. So in terms of what you just said, how did you consider these things, these life cycle stages that contribute greenhouse gas emissions, in building your database then? How did you incorporate that information?
Sure. So we considered each of those life cycle stages that we were just talking about. So for foods that were produced here in New Zealand, we brought together all of the available studies that have looked at greenhouse gas emissions from farming processes here in New Zealand. For foods that are mainly sourced from overseas, we used an existing UK database that gave us estimates of the emissions that arise from producing those foods in other countries. So we factored in the mode of transportation and the distances that foods have to travel to reach New Zealand from our main trading partners, so that we could estimate transport emissions. We also considered New Zealand specific energy production methods, so how renewable is our electricity grid when we were considering emissions that arise from electricity, which is used throughout the life cycle to store foods, to refrigerate them, and so forth.
Mm. Okay. And so what did you end up finding then with respect to the climate impacts of different foods in New Zealand? Like, if we look at individual food items, what do we actually know about their impact?
Well, as a general rule, we found that the climate impact of animal-based foods was considerably higher than that of plant-based foods. Beef and lamb have the highest climate impact per kilogram by far, followed by other meats, including processed meats, pork, butter, cheese. We can consider these foods to be, you know, the most climate polluting. Most other animal foods fall somewhere in the middle of the emission spectrum. So things like fish, eggs, poultry, yogurt, while highly processed foods, things like biscuits, cakes, pies, ice cream, all those treats, foods that are high in added sugar, like soft drink, they tend to fall somewhere toward the low to middle range of the spectrum in terms of their emission impact. Mm. In contrast, the majority of whole plant foods, including legumes, so beans, peas, or lentils, vegetables, fruits, whole grains, cereals, along with milk and milk alternatives, can be considered low-level emitters. In other words, these are the foods that are the most climate-friendly. Mm.
Okay, so you mentioned that one of your aims was to do some modeling around all of this so that you could assess how people might be better informed about their eating patterns overall and whether or not these are climate friendly or what the impact might be. And you talked about individual foods just then, but how does that sort of translate to what people consume overall? Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. So we thought it was important to show what was possible if people were willing to make changes to their eating pattern, and what would be possible if the entire population made a significant shift in that direction. So we first looked at what New Zealanders are actually consuming now, using data from the most recent adult nutrition survey. This provided us with a starting point from which we could model a number of hypothetical scenarios, which were all designed to meet New Zealand's dietary guidelines. So in that sense, all of our scenarios were nutritionally adequate in terms of meeting people's energy and nutrient needs as well. So we began by modeling a baseline scenario where we looked at minimal dietary changes required relative to what New Zealanders are eating currently in order to meet the guidelines. These changes included things like increasing intake of vegetables, fruits, whole grains, milk, while decreasing intake of highly processed foods, processed meats, sugary foods and drink, and in many cases, quite drastic decreases in those highly processed foods. So what we found with this baseline scenario is that while positive health impacts were very significant, greenhouse gas emission savings were minimal, with only a modest 4% reduction in diet-related greenhouse gas emissions. So not really anything you'd write home about. From there, we tailored our dietary scenarios to be progressively more plant-based, that is, substituting more and more animal-based foods with plant-based alternatives. As we did this, we found that population-level health gains continued to increase, but at the same time, these eating patterns became more and more climate-friendly. So to give you just a few examples of some of the scenarios that we looked at, a lacto-ovo-vegetarian scenario, where all meat and seafood is exchanged for eggs, legumes, nuts, and seeds. This scenario was found to offer emission savings of 23% and greater health gains as compared to baseline consumption, what people are currently consuming. Another scenario that replaced all meat, seafood, eggs, and dairy products with plant-based alternatives, so a vegan type scenario, was found to offer the greatest benefit across these parameters. Reducing diet-related emissions by up to a third and increasing population health benefits even further. I'd also like to mention that we looked at the contribution of food waste to diet-related emissions as well and found that if unnecessary household food waste, so food waste that is allowed to go off before it is eaten, was eliminated, additional greenhouse gas savings of between 10 and 12% could be achieved across all scenarios. And just a final comment to add is that we also found that the scenarios that we modeled have the potential to reduce healthcare expenditure as well, on the order of between $14 and $20 billion over the lifetime of the current New Zealand population.
Mm-hmm. Those are pretty substantial impacts, obviously, and I think that people will be really interested in learning about this and about what you found. And I think that letting people know too about what should change policy-wise is really important and what can happen sort of on a broader level. What would you like to see happen from here?
Well, I think that the science is sending us a pretty clear message, being that we need to transform our food systems for not only the sake of our population's health, but also for the sake of the planet and the planet's health. And I think that we should be focusing more on some of the systemic barriers that are currently preventing change, namely opposition from powerful food industry groups and reluctance among policymakers to institute meaningful change, or at least change that is, you know, appropriate to the level of the urgency that we're facing now. At least in my opinion, the current evidence base and in the context of these numerous environmental emergencies that we're currently facing, I think that, that the evidence base is strong enough to justify urgent action among policymakers now. In terms of what those actions are, I think including sustainability messaging within our national dietary guidelines would be a really good first step. We'd also like to see the implementation of other measures like pricing strategies. So that could be a subsidy on fresh fruit and vegetables, other things like labeling schemes on foods, revising food procurement guidelines for public institutions so that, you know, healthy, climate-friendly foods are available in hospitals, schools, and other institutions. I think those would be really good steps forward to take.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And more so that those things are the norm rather than the sort of, on-the-side kind of option, I think, as well.
Definitely.
Yeah, they all sound like really great next steps, and I really hope that things keep, I guess, progressing from here. Thanks for taking the time to do the project and for telling people about it too. I think it's really worthwhile.
No worries. It's great to talk.
Yeah.